Son of a bitch.
Good morning to you, too.
It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kid stealing, woo, wheeling, dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Bauer and Pollock. I am John Pollock from Live Audio Wrestling, joined as always by MLW Radio's Court Bauer. Court, how are you? Are you in the Halloween festive mood?
Oh, I'm excited. This is an exciting edition of Bauer and Pollock. We got lots to get to. We got Halloween costumes. I noticed that we have a WWE Brock Lesnar classic muscle chest costume available for adults and kids with the most terrifying mask I've ever seen. Are you going to be dressing as Brock Lesnar for Halloween?
No, I will not be. But this was the Court Bauer number one topic of the week. In a week that was very slow news-wise, we have Brock Lesnar's classic muscle chest costume for kids listed here as our top topic.
Well, listen.
You were frightened by this. Then you sent me a photo of it. I can confirm it is frightening. This looks like Brock Lesnar if he fell asleep in a tanning bed and came out of it like completely zapped of his size. And his eyes are just all drawn. And
carved out. It looks like his eyes have been carved out.
Yeah, it very much has a
disturbing
Michael Myers look to the face. Yeah, with that thing on top that Brock considers his hair.
Yeah, or something you'd see like in season one of True Detective, like some sort of ceremonial kill thing. It was very disturbing when you look at this mask. But there's a lot of interesting concepts for Halloween masks. If you're having a wrestling-themed Halloween party, you got this mask. You could come as a muscle barrel-chested Brock Lesnar with your eyes cut out. You could maybe go as Billy Corgan with the suit. He's going now. You have legal Billy Corgan out there. You could have Dixie dressed as the Hamburglar. That's another good one with her schemes that she's been up to this week. A lot of things going on in wrestling. I don't know where to begin, John. Where do we go?
Let us start with, I mean, we can talk about the TNA hearing from earlier this week. I mean, at least on our site, we have gone through kind of all the things that went down on Wednesday, which this reporter, Nate Rao, who has gained probably thousands of wrestling fans as followers, live tweeted this hearing the other day. And now it's wait and see until Monday when a ruling will presumably be issued by the judge. Court, you followed this as well. I mean, do you have a sense of which way this is leaning, or is it one of those things where it's just going to be the way the judge interprets this of which way it goes? Sometimes a case can make a whole lot of sense one way and the decision's the opposite.
Yeah, I think it's going to be – it depends on how you interpret their legal agreement, what they're able to do or not do. And I think it still will be – something that won't just end on Monday. I think this thing's going to be a protracted legal issue. I think there's going to be all types of legal issues addressed over this. I just it's not going to be cut and dry come Monday. It's not. You're not going to have a decision and then Dixie's vanquished or Billy Corgan goes back to touring with the Smashing Pumpkins and it's over. I think this will be pursued again and again for maybe for several months, but we'll see.
Yeah, so, I mean, essentially, it's going to come down to either it's ruled in Corgan's favor, where then they would essentially be agreeing with Corgan's side that the company is considered insolvent and was at a certain point. That was the whole argument, that if it ever was insolvent, that his loan would turn into equity in the company.
Right.
And the other side arguing that they were not insolvent, that they have money that Anthem is willing to put up. And on Corgan's side, they explain that it would then flip and they believe the breakdown would be essentially Anthem Sports with majority control of the company. Aerolux would have a smaller stake and it would be Jason Brown, who would be of Aerolux, who they have said is already kind of doing the day-to-day operations of the company, and then a 5% minority stake by another party. So that's where we stand at this point, and it's assessing as well the value of the company at this moment, Cort. And do you feel that, I mean, the example of Pop, for instance, losing that, I think, would be very harmful at this point, because we'd be right back at square one, and we already established what their options were a year ago when shopping this show around.
Yeah. If you're Pop, you need to fill your lineup, and this is a barter deal, essentially. So they have an obligation to fill that slot. If TNA,
and it does good numbers by Pop primetime standards.
But also they want something that they know is going to be there. Now, if they miss a week or two, it's reruns. But they need something that's going to be reliable and up to the standards in production that they signed on for when they originally did this deal. Hopefully things can stay stable enough to allow that to happen. You have a deal in the UK up. You have the Sony India deal, which is kind of in jeopardy because they've not fulfilled their obligation to go over there and tour per their contract with Sony of India. So it's problematic there. This company needs to stabilize, and hopefully, to Billy Corgan's point of needing $40 million, I think in order to stabilize and show some potential to grow, you're going to probably need to inject at least $40 million to just not just stabilize, but to look at coming out of this thing and trying to grow whatever you call TNA in the year 2017 and beyond into a viable product that's operating in the black. Right now, we obviously know it's a tough journey to get there. There's a lot of people, a lot of double dealing, it seems like, from what we saw reported on earlier in the week when this went to before the judge. I don't know. This is an ugly, ugly thing. I still think it can end up in bankruptcy, and there's a few forms of bankruptcy. So hopefully for the fans, for all the people employed by TNA, this thing gets resolved in a positive way. I got to say, from everything that's been reported by the reporter out of Tennessee that you mentioned, I am not impressed at all with how Dixie Carter has handled her business affairs. There has been some really unscrupulous, very shady things at play. And actually, Bruce Pritchard mentioned some of this on his podcast last Friday, because they did a 3-hour podcast on TNA and his time there as the head of talent relations, et cetera. And he talked about how they didn't even take care of withholding on taxes. They took out the money from his end, but they never paid the government. So, I mean, they've been doing some weird things, or maybe just some reckless accounting, for a long time. If Billy Corgan is the solution, he needs to clean house of these people that are mismanaging the company, but also change the culture. And needs. I mean, you really are looking at gutting this thing. And what are the assets? And what are what are your partners feeling right now? You got to give them great reassurance. He's got his work cut out for him. Does he have a great game plan? Does he have the vision for this? I don't know. We don't know until we see it executed and see him talking about it. Right now, he's still in the trenches trying to win this thing. I just hope for the employees, for the talent, this gets resolved and they have certainty going into 2017 that their jobs are secured and that this thing can live to fight another day. It's the TNA roller coaster has always been a series of ups and downs, and here we are in almost November of 2016, and I have no idea if this comes to exist in 2017, but I remember saying that last October on this show. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's kind of a wait-and-see approach until Monday. I've been trying to learn as much about this entire case, and I want to thank our Bauer & Pollock legal correspondent, Joseph Dugan, who came through large earlier this week, breaking a lot of this down for me. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens on Monday. I personally think, Cort, that this should be aired. I think this should be broadcast somewhere.
The trial?
The decision on Monday. This will blow away the LeBron decision.
The Dixie decision. Oh,
didn't Dixie have that wheel of Dixie? Remember that? She had the same Dario spin the wheel deal that she had at one point.
Way too many people have watched Halloween Havoc 1992. Oh my God, maybe 1993 as well. I think.
You know, I do want to say for, I mean, all of the TNA focus this week is on this hearing and decision on Monday. Did you see any of Impact on Thursday night with the Hardy skits?
No, I have not.
There was some, these were really well done. There was some very funny stuff in here. I won't give it away for those that want to watch it. It was definitely the highlight of Impact. Impact was actually a pretty good show on Thursday night.
Well, and it's stabilized. Skits, the show has stabilized. And
totally.
And you know, let's not forget Bobby Lashley last week in the
There's a great closing angle with Lashley that I thought was just – it was really unexpected. It was shot very different than usual. It was a really strong way, I thought, to go off the show. And even the Hardy stuff, a lot of it is, you know, comedy, but there was an actual angle to it, and there's a match that comes out of these skits at the end of it. Those were some positives for sure from Impact on Thursday.
Yeah, and also Bobby Lashley shouting out Eddie Edwards after his Bellator fight.
Yes.
I mean, you can't ask for more of a guy in the moment after a fight to remember to sell something. I don't know if it was asked of him or not, but Bobby has grown so much over the last several years, and you really see him come into his own. And Matt Hardy's reinvented himself. There's so many great stories that are being eclipsed by the seedy business operations of TNA right now. And it's a shame because there's a lot of guys in front of the camera and behind the camera doing good work and making the most in a very tough situation. And I commend them all. It's amazing to see a great work still put on that show. I'm like always a week behind in watching. I've been watching it more and more. There was a time when I wasn't watching TNA at all. Can't say that now.
I still feel it's a show that would benefit greatly from being 90 minutes. I think if it was a shorter show, I think it would – you're locked to all of these deals, so it's not something that you can really adjust the length of this show. But you also think, Court, that how many more shows could you bank when you're doing these tapings if you were taping a shorter show than 2 hours? I feel like 2 hours is just – it was something that when they were 1 hour, they needed to be 2 hours. And – this is not a show to me that needs to be 2 hours every week. I would be much rather – I think there's a lot of shows at the moment that, you know, the vast majority of wrestling shows outside of Raw and SmackDown, that 1 hour is typically your length. I think that's the attention that most of your audience has, and it keeps you wanting more. And with this show, I think 2 hours, they could benefit greatly from just being 90.
Absolutely agree. And, you know, an hour-long show, I mean, if you're a barter deal – I mean, that really – that's fine. I mean, it's just up to you to sell ad inventory. If you're not able to sell the ad inventory or you're doing it at a lower price and it's not covering your production costs for a second hour, get rid of that second hour. Do 1 hour. Your roster will be much stronger for it. You know, they are also stuck in these deals abroad, which makes it a little bit more problematic. So we'll see how they come out of the jungles of litigation. But they have a lot of litigation. Dixie's getting slammed with litigation over the last 2 weeks.
Let's move on over to the WWE. And, you know, this was a big, big topic going into WrestleMania 31 last year. Was Brock Lesnar's deal coming due? And was he going to leave? Was he going to re-sign with the WWE? He went on ESPN announcing that he was staying with the WWE. Well, we had another big one coming due. And we can all breathe a sigh of relief. The WWE has offered a contract extension, and Stephanie McMahon has accepted it. She is staying for another 3 years. Stephanie locked down in the WWE.
I guess.
I mean, you couldn't have. I mean, she certainly probably had a lot of options there, but at the same time, you're always sweating until you get that offer on paper.
I agree. You never know what's going to happen like this, but I think she would have definitely had an offer from Lucha Underground. I think we kind of fantasy booked that off the air, but I think they would have brought her in, do a little something with Dario Cueto. He would put her in the gauntlet match. She'd probably beat Brian Cage, probably beat Mundo, probably beat Mil Muertes, and then get schoolboyed by Mascarita Sagrada.
All possible options.
Hey, what happens in the temple stays in the temple.
That would have been the best. For someone to fantasy book Stephanie McMahon's independent run if she left the WWE.
She couldn't use her last name, though. It would just be Stephanie.
She could have put out like a Cody Rhodes list online of all the things she wanted to do.
Stephanie was big on lists. I can confirm that.
stardom. Let's talk about the WWE's third quarter report that came out on Thursday. It was a profitable quarter for the company. It was, let us look here, revenue of $164.2 million and profits of $11.1 million, which they had been projecting a profit between $18 and $22 million at the last investors call. But revenue for the year so far is at $534 million, so they're on pace to have a massive year revenue-wise. Mm-hmm. And then looking at the network subscribers...
Yes.
The average paid subscribers for the quarter, 1,458,000. And on September 30th, it was at 1,444,000, which breaks down to 1,071,000 U.S. and 373,000 international.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see WWE just at that number for domestic paid customers and then 373,000 internationally, less churn than last year's quarter three, but the same
still churn though. I mean, we still had 388,000 people that did add the network, but 455,000 that unsubscribed.
Churn hurts.
Churn, baby, churn. Berrios does not like that line.
Oh my God, his face on a t-shirt with that on the back, money.
Oh, James Ellsworth and George Barrios. That's your tag team. That's the direction to go with Ellsworth.
Someone might be listening.
There is no one better. When George Barrios gets on that call and he has to go through that KPI, there's no one better. I just picture the man plugging himself in and boom. He actually reminds me of that. Remember the Saved by the Bell episode when they had to – was it Saved by the Bell? No, it was Family Matters where they had to make the hot dogs at the mall.
I am not a family guy. Was it Family Guy or Family Matters?
Family Matters.
Not a Family Matters guy.
This is when they're doing like the hot dog, like they're hot dog vendors, and they're making so many, and they've got like a robot.
This sounds great.
And it was, and churn baby churn was the line. I have not watched this episode in probably 25 years, so my memory is fading. But nonetheless, let's get back to this third quarter discussion and move over from George Barrios, who is always the star of these calls.
Yes, along with his hair. And of course, they also indicated that Raw ratings down year over year, SmackDown ratings up due to the brand split, and network subscription revenue increased 18% to 1.46 million, which when you think about the revenue they're generating compared to the pay-per-view days, it's interesting to look at those numbers. They also added 300 hours of original content in 2016, more than 2,500 of archival content, bringing an on-demand library to about 7,000 hours by year's end, which is more than four times than at launch, which I guess is good. I'm still waiting for WCW Saturday Night to pop up there. There were some good times in the...
No thunders yet either, Court.
No, yeah, I like. There was some good thunder. I missed a lot of thunder during college, so I'd love to go back. I remember the luchadors.
You didn't miss a whole lot of thunder.
No, but I remember the luchadors doing some. They were tearing it up, and I was like, man, I wish I had taped it because we didn't have a TiVo or DVR at the time, or PVR as you call it. Yeah, I'd love to see Saturday Night Thunder and a lot of Superstars, the old flagship for WWF in the 80s, their syndicated weekly show. So never know if we're going to get that, but probably eventually.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want a lot of analysis on this, of course, Dave Meltzer always has a great rundown of the quarterly reports that'll be in next week's Observer. Others like Brandon Howard, Chris Harrington on Twitter. You should follow those guys. Some great analysis into all of this. It was interesting on the investors call. A number of topics were brought up by investors that the WWE, I mean, there's nobody. I mean, this is like watching Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, the way they just, with precision, sidestep and avoid. But there was a handful of questions about the recent attempt by AT&T to buy Time Warner, how this is applicable to the WWE. They also noted the UFC sale, and the buzz term, Court, was "we're open for business." We're open for business.
Okay, what's that mean?
I don't know what that means. I mean, that is factual. They are open for business, and essentially they will field any offers that come their way, but Vince stressed it's very important to be able to control your own destiny and left it at that. So the idea of someone coming in and swooping Vince McMahon's voting shares is probably not likely, but we're open for business.
Listen, they're like a 24-hour McDonald's. You just roll through that window. What do you want? They have it on demand for you, WWE Network style. But I do believe at the end, NBC Universal, or whatever that conglomerate is at that point in time, is the only one that will be at play for a deal. And I believe that that is possible.
They also noted the fact that in 2019, not only is the domestic deal up, but so are the UK and India deals. So that's going to be another, I mean, we're 3 years away, but they have now, once again, strategically, you have your biggest deals in television coming up at the same time. And who knows what kind of, that was one of the questions, was not even going the route of a giant rights increase. The guy asked it like, do you expect to maintain what you guys have now? I mean, can you just assure us of that? Because the last time, I mean, what a buildup it was, where they were talking about doubling their rights fees. And that's when the stock hit its all-time high during the lead up to that.
Right.
And they did not meet the investors' expectations, and they had kind of – it was still a very solid – like it's still the best rights deal the WWE has ever had. But expectations were so high that I would think this time around they're going – and who knows what the landscape will be like in 3 years from now and where the demand is for WWE programming and what their programming even consists of in 3 years.
And what's their value to an NBC, to a Universal? Because NBC secured 50 new blue chip advertisers for WWE in the past 2 years, which I think is a pretty good run. Is it great now? No, it's really good. And so as long as they're filling the ad inventory at a good rate, they're pricing this at a rate where it's moving, but also making them the money they need to cover for this, then hopefully there's a value there. Of course, WWE would love to have some leverage and have another suitor come to the table, but I don't think that's going to happen. Fox Sports is so tied up with UFC and their budget's so diminished because of this. They're not in play. ESPN, that's interesting because of their new WWE vertical they got going on their site. Don't know.
Well, one interesting connection to all of this is that at the end of 2018, that's when the UFC's deal comes up with Fox. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you can look at the amount purchased for the UFC, I mean, WME, IMG, they have to raise earnings dramatically, and they are banking on hitting it out of the park with their rights fees coming due and getting a giant increase. And if they were to, whether they bundled all of their package together on one network and shop it around, if they spread it out like the NFL does, it could leave Fox with a major gap. And timing-wise, they lose the UFC at the end of 2018 when the WWE package comes due at the end of 2019, and that could be a replacement.
It could.
It could on paper. It's so hard to say. But
to me, it diminishes WWE in terms of this FS1. It's just a bad network it's in a bad neighborhood, so to speak, when it comes to networks. If you're on Fox, you know, national broadcast network a few times a year, that's really interesting. I don't know if it's not enough of a trade-off unless there's something when it comes to the dollars. That's where it's going to be interesting. Where does UFC go? Then you got to think that one through. Where's a good home for the UFC? Is it ESPN? Is it, you know, Viacom, CBS? Who knows? Could we see them back at Spike? I doubt it. I think Bellator is pretty much set up there, but crazier things have happened.
Yeah, so of course.
Yeah, Bellator versus UFC.
Yeah, on the same network. Yeah. You could have a legit Invasion. Brand split where you're battling over television ratings, and you could do a draft every year.
Oh, my God.
Wow, yeah. The MMA brand split on Spike. I mean, Viacom does own a significant portion of Bellator, so it'd be a little – I'm sure they'd be a little biased, but nonetheless.
Can you imagine the draft? You could have Dana White and Scott Coker there.
Oh, my God, and you have Dana White come out and say, it's time to shake things up, motherfuckers.
Oh, we're booking MMA into.
Oh, that's where Stephanie would go. Oh, if she hadn't assigned this deal, though, it'd be up in 2019.
There you go.
So her deal comes up, and she comes in as the GM of UFC.
And then you can have Bjorn come back.
Oh, dude. Oh, this sounds awesome, actually.
This is big time right here. We're booking the MMA business.
Dude, Bjorn coming out and hugging Dana would be the Vince Bischoff moment.
Yeah, wow, you're really putting...
Comes out time back, and he's all in his black.
You're putting...
I mean, that's what Bjorn always wore. Him and Dana, it was just all black that they'd always wear to the fights.
Bald and black. That was their gimmick. One was a bit more successful with it in business.
Last thing on the quarterly report, they're forecasting for the next quarter average paid subs on the network of 1.42 million. So they are actually forecasting a slight drop in their average subscribers. But everything is kind of geared towards next year, Court, where they are predicting a massive year of revenue for 2017 and believing it will be a record year for the company in 2017, and did slide in the fact that some international TV rights deals are also coming due next year. So that is the report on the third quarter for the WWE, the least sexy of the quarters.
Well, one thing that was disturbing is, and it may be an indication of the devaluing of WWE's strong licensing, they had lower royalties on video games and toys, which have been staples for decades for WWE. My assessment would be that they've essentially oversaturated the market on the toy end and the apparel end. And their audience is a bit older and more hardcore. And there's only – I mean, even Jax, when they had that deal, they flooded the market with a lot of toys, a lot of unique collectible stuff that's still out there. I mean, you can go to a store today, and this is probably, I think, one of the reasons why Lucha Underground struggles with licensing, is that you can go to Toys R Us here and get a Rey Mysterio toy off the shelf. I mean, they're still there 2 years after he's been gone from
company. Yeah, it's a good point.
Yep. I mean, you have an oversaturation of the market. It's still all – I mean, listen, I think the video game will come back. It'll boomerang back. I do believe that this is going to be a hot year for the video game. They've never had such a light shined on the video game. I mean, look, it's the build to Survivor Series. It's plugged extensively. It's interesting. We've never talked about
this. It's also got an incredible commercial that is running
Incredible commercials. Multiple cuts, including one that does include Alberto, one that doesn't. You just see his back, which I thought was pretty funny. But, you know, this is still bad for brand prestige and something they have to figure out how to work around this, and why is this? How do you get away from this? And I think they got to pull back on the overflow of toys, but good luck telling that to your partner.
As well, the call for the WWE investors deal. No questions about Flow Slam, which we are going to discuss. It was formally announced this past Monday. The service that is launching FlowSlam.tv, and their first deal that they've announced, an exclusive 5-year partnership with WWN Live to stream all of the events for Evolve, Shine, Full Impact Pro, and the WWN Live Super Shows that happen over WrestleMania weekend, and also includes the WWN Live Library. So I think that's a good deal to start with. The price point is $20 a month, or $150 for the year. And certainly this has got a lot of people discussing, Court, because of how aggressive Flow Slam is going to be when it comes to courting independent organizations, what other deals they're going to be announcing, and does this create a competitor for the WWE Network, or at the very least, if this has a following to it, does it artificially raise the price point for the WWE Network, that if something is viable at $20, they could easily increase their price out of all of this? Do you see this as viable? Or is it too early to tell?
Too early to tell. We got to see the full rollout. To judge it on WWN alone, it's unfair. It's unfair to do to Flo and to WWN. I mean, you just can't assess this as it is now. I think we'll look in a month or two and see what they've rolled out, and it might be one of the most appealing packagings of content that's ever been done. We'll see, but they have a lot of tricky potential partners doing a deal with Paco Alonso and CMLL. The content is there. They pump out a ton of content, but it's not easy to do a deal with Paco Alonso. New Japan, same thing. You know, they always will give you the thumbs up, and then, you know, pen to paper, totally different. Will Progress abandon its pretty successful built-up
OTT platform and go to this? I don't know.
That's going to be an issue with a lot of these promotions where if this was 2 years ago, I think there would be an easier path to a lot of these promotions before they launch their own on-demand services. I mean, you've put a lot into that and building that up that, I mean, for the right offer, an independent promotion will shut down their streaming service, but it creates an extra layer of cost, essentially, on top of that. You and I have talked about this many times, that with all of these streaming services popping up, there's an opening. If someone were to get a bunch of these under one umbrella, I feel it could be viable given what is out there. And if they get enough different promotions and variety, I think that's totally worth $20 a month that you get all the Evolve shows and whatever else they can add to it. I think it's a good start having Evolve, but I don't think you're at a point where enough people are going to buy just based on that. But no one's expecting that to be the be-all, end-all of this. I think it's only the first announcement.
You got to look at the return on this investment. Is it going to work out in the long term? And that requires a few things. First of all, awareness. And you have to go above and beyond the run-of-the-mill marketing. You have to do a big campaign. And if they have deep pockets, they should do a big campaign. Get the word out. Do some serious national spots. Do some regional spots. Do digital spots in a big way. And spend that money there once you've built up this content. It's not now. That's down the road when you do acquire some of these big dogs in the hunt. If you do that, also, you've got to remember you've got to have a really good CDN. And a CDN's content delivery network. And I talked a little bit about that on Tuesday's flagship show on MLW Radio with Mr. St. Laurent. We've since found out that their CDN is Uyala. Shout out to Eddie for getting that for us. They work with NBC Universal, Sky Sports, ITV, RTL. So they are a very reputable content delivery network service. Will they be able to deal with the unique nature of this kind of venture and what independent companies need and how you get that content to the CDN to stream to your laptop, to the Roku and Apple TV, which is where Flow Slam is available through Flow Sports app? I don't know, because there's so many pieces that interconnect to get a stream from a local high school for indie wrestling or Arena Mexico to your computer. And if one of those falters, all those links in the chain, they can start to come apart, and then you don't get the stream. So if their reputation for their CDN, their stream is good, then we're open for business, as WWE would say.
That's the name of this show.
It's going to come also down to the content. You know, being able to get those big dogs, the marketing, and the CDN. If they can get that to work and align properly, this could be very viable. And they have a big, big staff down there in Austin, Texas. This isn't some like group of six people just saying, "Hey, what if we did this?" and going out there and cutting checks. They have a big staff down there in Austin, Texas for Flow Slam, Flow Sports. So we'll see where this thing goes later this year. But they are being very aggressive in acquiring content. But to our point earlier, do you want to abandon a platform where you have a built up audience and built up list of subscribers, customers, and take a leap of faith, not knowing and being privy to maybe their business as a whole? You're putting a lot of your future in their hands. That can be troubling, and also could be a great opportunity. It's a leap of faith. It really is. And Evolve, WWN took that. Ring of Honor is going to take that, I think, and several other companies. We'll see how it plays out for all of them. And does this change New Japan's strategy looking at New Japan World in the U.S.? Do they consider, there's an appetite for us. Do we do it with these guys, or do we just set up shop in the U.S. and do it our own way? Because I do feel the war drums are beating for an opportunity for New Japan to come in independent of Ring of Honor and do business in the United States. Will they? Well, they've flirted with it for years. I don't know.
Let me ask you this. With the announcement of Flow Slam, is there an artificial increase to the value of the TNA tape library from this? Because for wrestling promotions out there, there's one place that is going to pay you good money for your tape library. And if you're a Flow Slam, that would be a library I'd be very aggressive about. And if the WWE sent out an offer, knowing no one else is going to come close to this, you potentially have someone else that would have a reason to bid high on that library.
Listen, I would consider the TNA library to be hands off. I think it loses value because of how entangled it is with all the legal issues and claims to ownership. That's one that I would not even be considering now because this thing.
Theoretically, a week from now, someone's at least
maybe
this picture will be somewhat clear.
Well,
pending
any future litigation, a legal rematch, people trying to overturn this. This isn't going to be cleaned up, cut and dried in a week. There is no way that's a fantasy. This thing isn't going to just be unless Dixie abandons, which at this point, after what she's gone through and what she's done, I don't see that in her belief system. I don't. I may be wrong, but I don't. I don't think this is all settled in a week. And then Billy can take offers for this content, which, you know, if he's going to reboot the company, what does the old content mean anyway? And honestly, you know, there was some really good stuff like Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe, and the Knockouts division had an amazing run. But there's a lot of bad in that content too. People say, oh, WCW had worse. No. TNA, WCW had some fantastic content, some amazing content. The bad stuff was pretty bad at the end, but you can't out – I mean the majority of WCW's content was much better than TNA.
But I think if – I mean you can look at this two ways. I mean ROH has an outstanding library as well. Production-wise, that's the biggest fault of ROH's library. You cannot say that about TNA. I mean their production by and large has looked professional throughout their run.
It has. It has absolutely.
And if you're a flow, that's a library to me that does have – that has an ability to at least entice a lot of people that are maybe on the fence about something like this. And I'm not saying they could – this is a simple deal to make. I just feel that library, it has, I would say, more value with a viable competitor like flow getting into the game than where we were a week ago, where if you want to sell that library, it's WWE or nothing.
Well, here's the other thing. Ring of Honor's library, the good stuff that you want to see, Joe Punk, all that stuff, it's not digitized. It is sitting in its original format and hasn't been converted. When I was there, I remember pitching, we got to get all this money, all this great footage digitized. We're leaving a ton of money on the table. And there was a philosophical issue, and they didn't want to do that. They wanted to look towards the future, not towards the past, essentially. But that is some primo content. And, yeah, the lighting is not up to snuff, but, my God, those matches were terrific. That content is a gold mine that hasn't been exploited. And everyone's leaving money on the table with that thing.
Let's move on. We've got Hell in a Cell on Sunday night in Boston. Three Hell in a Cell matches. Probably two too many, but nonetheless, we have three cell matches. And, I mean, Court, the big question, you're putting this together. What is going on last on Sunday?
Do you want to make Vince happy or do you want to make your customers happy? Because Vince, if you want to make Vince happy, you're going to put any match but the women's match on last.
Here is what I will say on Sunday, okay? Because I know this will happen, all right? If Sasha and Charlotte go on anything but last, and that crowd turns on the main event, and we get people in the WWE knocking the fans online, and don't take it out on the blah, 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 all the you guys made your bed if this crowd does turn on that main event or whatever has to follow Sasha and Charlotte because they expected it to go on last. They're in Boston. You know this going in. So I don't want to hear any crying from the WWE side that the crowd hijacked the show.
Well,
you totally know what you're going into. Just like this past Monday with Brock going out in Minneapolis. And why did the crowd cheer him?
Well, that was
like, come on. How do you not have your finger on the pulse to that elementary level?
Wrestling at its core is manipulation, and it's building anticipation. It's building something and anticipating it. Ooh, you're going to put those two in the same room? Oh, my God. And WWE has fallen behind the eight ball on that, and the crowd is manipulating them. And the crowd, and it's their right, and Vince would agree, it's the crowd's right to, if they don't like it, to reject it. But you have to listen and then make adjustments. You can't just go back out there and say, oh, let's do it again next week. They have not listened to their customers, their audience about Roman Reigns and so many others. And so many different storylines, and it's become problematic, and they haven't done anything to address it. But we'll see what they do. Now they have Charlotte Flair. She's no longer Charlotte. She's Charlotte Flair. I kind of got used to Charlotte, so seeing Charlotte Flair is a little like, whoa, not used to it. But I think that match is going to be really a really good match. Hell in a Cell matches can be tricky. I'm curious to see how they lay out that match in there. They have high expectations going in and a lot of pressure on them, and they're both great under high pressure situations. So we'll see how they handle it up in Boston.
I'd keep Roman and Rusev like 10 minutes, just hard hitting, fast pace, big finish, and that's it. 10 minutes. You do not need 20 minutes for that match when you have two other Cell matches that presumably are going to follow that U.S. title match.
Yeah, I don't know, 12 or so minutes, maybe. But you know, the Kevin Owens Seth Rollins match will be probably really good. But they did nothing to sell me on it after Monday. That did not.
Pardon the pun.
Yeah, no, it did not work at all.
So that is on Sunday night with Hell in a Cell. Moving on, we have why don't you chat about this? The Combate America's new U.S. deal that was announced this past week.
Yeah.
You had a very eventful week, did you not?
Yeah.
Didn't you break up a fight?
Combate America's announced down in Mexico City on Wednesday that they have cut a deal with Azteca. Azteca 7 in Mexico and Azteca America in the United States. And that's a pretty big deal. Azteca 7, it's one of the top, if not the top, over-the-air broadcast networks in Mexico. So you're going to be in every household in Mexico, and they're going to have several. They're going to air the live events for Combate Americas, and Combate Americas is revving up to doing shows every month, starting in 2017. So you're going to have that broadcast live down in on a delay. One-day delay in Mexico. And then also they're going to be a weekly series, basically best-of series classics airing in Mexico as well as in the United States with their sister network. So that will be something that my workload's increasing a lot, overseeing a lot of the production of Combate Americas now with my newish position. I've been with the company since day one, but my roles have changed a little bit over the last year. So a lot more work basically for me. But next event's January 19th, live from Mexico City. And let's see who was there. We had a lot of the fighters there, Gustavo Lopez, Kira Maguay, Batara, and of course, Alberto El Presidente and his fiance, Paige. You might have seen her in the background during the press conference along with Campbell McLaren. So it's an eclectic group here at Combate Americas. But we're also on UFC Fight Pass and the Fight Network. So you know how this goes. Everyone's somehow 6 degrees connected to everyone.
Is the commentary staying with Frank Shamrock and Juliana Pena for the next shows?
I believe so, yeah. I believe Frank and Juliana are the team. And then in Mexico for the Spanish team, it's going to be a four-man team because I guess they asked for that. So that will be Andres Bermudez, Andrea Calle, Carlos Aguilar, and popping up here and there will be Alberto along with other people in that fourth spot. In that fourth chair. So Mexican style, Spanish announce table.
On Monday night, we are going to get a Halloween-themed edition of Raw.
We are.
And do you want to hear a scary stat, Court?
Okay.
The last time that the WWE had a Raw episode on Halloween night, where everyone's panicking that this is going to just die on Monday, which it's not going to be a great number on Monday, but the last time was 2011. They did just under 4.5 million viewers. Now, that was in the two-hour era. But this year, there is not one Raw episode that is going to come close to 4.5 million. Not the day after the Rumble. Not the day after WrestleMania. None this year. And that, to me, was staggering when I looked that up this week. That Halloween night in 2011 will beat every Raw in 2016.
Yeah, and that's a troubling indication. I mean, viewing patterns do change. How you get your content through Hulu or other. I mean, if you go to WWE.com right now, you can, if you want to blow off 3 hours and just watch the next day on your time, they have all the key clips, the video content of each segment and a recap. you can breeze through that during your lunch and be all
like they put up like 15, 16 videos like Monday night, Tuesday morning of every, as you said, everything.
Everything
and
you want.
To be honest, if I didn't have to review this every week, that is probably how I would follow Raw, is just go through the video clips on YouTube, and that would be all I would need.
Yeah. So
it's legal. It's quick videos.
Very efficient.
It's just the highlights of everything. Yeah. I mean, you can totally follow along and not miss a beat.
Not miss a beat. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. For NBC USA, maybe they think otherwise because, hey, you're taking the value out of making this appointment television, making this appointment programming by doing that. And maybe viewing patterns are changing. If you look at the NFL, they got they're seeing diminishing ratings when they were bulletproof, except for the Monday Night Wars when WWE and WCW were kind of chipping away a little bit at their ratings. But in the here and now, that's another indication that viewing patterns are changing. I used to think it was a cop-out, but if you look at the data, it just suggests that things have changed and how people get their content. And 3 hours on a Monday night is not doing anyone any favors, which has been a constant theme for many years now as WWE has continued to supersize their product. And when it comes to content, it's volume more often than not over quality.
Just a few more topics here. Looking ahead to UFC 205, are you sensing a lot of buzz in the city? Are you seeing a lot of promotion for the card yet? Is it still too early? We're about 3 weeks out from this show.
Very quiet. Very quiet. I'm surprised how quiet it is. It's like, hey, maybe, I mean, I don't know.
Jesus, 2 weeks until
the
show.
You know what?
Man.
I mean, I remember they've come out here nearby before, not in New York, of course, but until the week of the fights, the fight week, it's like this. It's just And then fight week comes and it's like, wow, they just hit the city hard 24/7 for five concentrated days. I can't believe how hard they hit the city. We've been oversaturated with UFC. So I think fight week is really when you gauge this now. I mean, there's no coverage of it. There's no real no buzz, but I think when we get in there in that 5 day stretch, we'll see a big pop for UFC awareness and everything going on with their product. I'd be stunned if we don't. I really would be.
Do you look at this as kind of a barometer of WME IMG's kind of fingerprint on this? Because I look at this as their first big event since buying the company. You did have 202, but that was so fresh after the news that you can't really evaluate on it. Here they've had a number of months. Mm-hmm. You're in this massive media market. I'm curious to see what kind of exposure they get, maybe non-conventional outlets that they get any of the fighters on, and different people covering this. Are you looking at it the same way, or do you expect kind of more of the same of just the UFC style of promotion and what's already been in place prior to the set?
Hard to tell because in their position when they bought this company, they cut a lot of jobs in the last few weeks, and they've cut this thing down to the bone when it comes to operations and how much they need to be a fully functional Death Star. I don't know. We're going to find out. In New York is really easy. When you go to a market that's a little harder, that's when you really will see them tested. They're really going unopposed. They're going in when you're not competing with the Mets, the Yankees. You have a little bit of football, basketball just starting off. So you don't really have that much competition. It's hard to know. You know, they've really leaned out this thing. Can they operate in an efficient manner as so lean? We'll see. I don't know. I really don't know. They don't really need it for New York, but as the hype machine is needed to make stars in 2017, really all the time, that's really critical to this operation. And they really got to find new machines to make stars. Originally, it was the Ultimate Fighter. Now they're talking about that thing shutting it down in the next year. If that gets shut down, I do agree that has not been an efficient or an effective star-making machine for them, a platform for them. What's going to replace it? That's been the million-dollar question for years.
There's a great article up at MMAJunkie.com by Ben Folks and Stephen Morocco, two reporters who got documents on the sale and kind of just actually crunching the numbers of what WME IMG is going through, and it cites scaling back Ultimate Fighter from a production budget annually of $27.6 million they were spending on the show down to $10 million on the show, and also the fact that just in payroll costs, they are expected to cut $55.4 million just in payroll alone. So dramatic costs that they are slashing at the moment, and the earnings figures that they have. It says here the UFC claimed its earnings were $170 million from June of 2015 to 2016, and the way this deal is structured, there's bonuses in play where they need to bump that figure up to $275 million next year, and then even higher in 2018 by getting earnings up to $350 million to kick in another series of bonuses. So I would definitely check out that article for a whole rundown of kind of the numbers that WME IMG is playing with here and how the cuts play into all of that. It's a very drastically different company, and it's right in the middle of this transition.
They have to make a lot of money and not spend a lot of money, and that's how they're going. And then at some point, they're going to either cash out with their exit strategy being to sell to someone else, or probably go public. And which one comes first, or which one's the most appealing option for them, depends on where their business is at. They might not be able to do one versus the other. So it's a totally different world, totally different era for UFC as of this August. And we're just beginning to see the first signs of that, the first chapter being written with their cutbacks and how they position the company in the future. Remains to be seen. Curious to see how they resolve the Georges St. Pierre issue, because he can mean a lot. He can revive Canada. He's a huge star. He's a familiar face from the good times, the big times. Not that the recent years haven't been big and great too, but he represents something special. And if you're not making new stars, you need a guy like that more. But you have a small window to make this happen, and it's getting contentious and more contentious. So will we see Bisping versus GSP, do you think, anytime soon?
I'm not optimistic of that happening. It's such a small turnaround at this point before December the 10th in Toronto. I think it's more likely that a deal is reached with Georges St. Pierre to fight next year. I don't completely close it out for Toronto. We still do have a number of weeks before that show, but we're really getting down to the wire of where, you know, George has not fought in 3 years. You want to have a proper training camp ahead of time, knowing who your opponent is. And I mean, here we are, we're at the end of October. That show is December the 10th. Yeah. It's decision time, and it feels very much from both sides that a deal is not going to be reached in time for that card.
Yeah, that's the same way I feel about Flow Slam throwing Wei Ting and I big-time money to do Grapple Kingdom 2 in Orlando. I mean, I don't know if we have the time. I don't know.
Well, did you not see that sign on Raw Monday night? I mean, there's clearly a demand for Wei Ting and Brock Lesnar. Maybe that's the WrestleMania match next
year. Wow, I'm just getting blown off. He's just going right to Brock Lesnar. I might have to go after the special referee Samoa Joe or something, and we'll just split
this up. You and I are going to be stuck in Orlando as the undercard, I guess. It's going to be Wei Ting and Brock Lesnar next year.
That's fine. I'll play second fiddle to that main event. Hey, Flow Slam. You know, it's all about money, my friend.
Well, let us wind things down, Court. Yes. What is happening in the world of MLW? I understand you are expanding your roster this week.
Yes.
Why don't you drop the names now?
This Monday, we'll be dropping the names of a new show.
The Barbershop with Brutus Beefcake coming to MLW Radio.
I thought you were going to say the Barbarian Show.
Oh, the Barbarian and Brutus.
I just like the Barbarian Show. Just him just talking about what's going on in North Carolina, where he's lived.
The whole podcast is him coming on, and it's like a sentence.
Hey, okay, I'm out. See you next week.
That's it. That is truly episodic programming, where at the end of the year, you will have an entire, like, just word by word each week, and it'll add up to something at the end.
We could probably get a sweet antler headgear sponsor for the Barbarian Show.
That is the future of podcasts. It's shorter shows.
Oh, dude.
Three to 5 minutes.
Our sales team showed us, like, one of the most successful podcasts when it comes to ad sales is 13 minutes long. I said, oh, I'm not working smarter. I'm working harder then, because I got to get that down to 13 minutes.
You and I are really behind the times. We just did like a month's worth today.
We are working harder, not smarter. But anyway, yes, Monday we'll have some big news over at MLWRadio.com on two gentlemen joining the team. Looking forward to that announcement. And then we'll be announcing the on-sale date for Wale Mania 3 tickets on Tuesday's flagship show with Mr. St. Laurent and myself on MLW Radio. Later today, Bruce Pritchard's back with Something to Wrestle With. Bruce Pritchard, and he'll be talking about the steamy, scandalous days. I was there for this. I'm looking forward to this episode of the Matt Hardy, Lita, and Edge love triangle gone awry. That was a shoot that turned into a work back in, I think, 2005. So that's this week's Something to Wrestle With. Ric Flair shows out, and we have a ton more. MSL and Sullivan, et cetera, et cetera. All over at MLWRadio.com. Don't miss it. And then on Sunday, the VIP Lounge with our new co-host, Shelton Benjamin, along with MVP and Alex Greenfield, are joined by Colt Cabana. It's like a podcast mania this week here at MLW. So check it out, MLWRadio.com. It's a ton of podcasts going on over there.
You know who a VIP has to be at Wale Mania 3? Mm-hmm. The tagline just sells itself.
Yes.
Bigger, better, badder, barbarian. VIP.
I was thinking more like the doorman, but okay.
Up at liveaudiowrestling.com, we have our usual slate of shows that are up, reviews of Raw, SmackDown, and a bunch of revolving guest co-hosts as Wei Ting is off in Japan as we speak. And
what's he doing in Japan?
He's just on a vacation right now. He just is traveling the world solo. He went to Japan. He was then off to China.
This sounds more like what you would do when you're in training. Go to different places. This is what they do back in the territory days. I went to the Orient and learned a special Oriental Asiatic spike hold. Is he going to come and use that on Brock Lesnar at Grapple Kingdom 2?
I can't confirm or deny that he is training for April of 2017 in Orlando. He is going deep to prepare. But those shows are up. We also have a show up today, a new review away, reviewing Combat Zone Wrestling's Tournament of Death 9. You should definitely check this out over the weekend, Court.
I'm waiting for Tournament of Death 9 and 3/4, so we'll see.
So that is up. And then Sunday night on The Law will be live midnight Eastern time. We'll have a rundown of Hell in a Cell. We're going to have part two of our chat with Eric Bischoff. And we are kicking off our contest where on Title Bout Trivia, you can win not only tickets to ringside with Jim Ross on November the 20th, Survivor Series Day at Second City here in Toronto, but also the chance to have dinner with Jim Ross and the Law Crew the night before prior to TakeOver.
Oh, so that God. Will be I've done happening. That. Holy shit.
It will be quite the time. A barbecue place to be announced.
Well, hopefully the drinks are cold.
So that is all happening. And check us out, liveaudiowrestling.com, at Law Radio on Twitter. And you can also follow at Court Bauer for just his random thoughts. And maybe he will let us know what he is going out for on Halloween as.
Teen Wolf's dad.
Wonderful. We all know he'll be the barbarian. And I'll be the warlord.
With the wand?